Welcome to the Garden Show. This is Kitty Labonte.
I'm Molly Kabler. I'm delighted to be here this morning with you.
It's absolutely glorious to talk about gardening. And I'm looking out the window going, well, maybe it's not quite as glorious to garden right now, but it's a good time to think about gardening.
It's also a good time to collect gardening supplies, including starts and shrubs.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things we wanted to talk about, well, you know, maybe your garden kind of looks like it's in suspended animation, at least for some things. I mean, the bulbs are growing great guns. A lot of the primroses are growing great guns, and we'll talk about those later. But it is kind of a good time to plan and accumulate. So we really did want to talk about, like, how do you go about picking out plants?
Right. It's been a difficult thing over the last year to get a lot of our supplies, both locally. There was a sort of a cessation of, I would say, robust supplies available. And then there was also the difficulty of shipping and supply chains. There's a lot of things that are somewhat difficult. But we do have purveyors of garden plants in town, and we're thankful for that. And it would be great to go ahead and get your starts in those places if you haven't made them yourselves. I mean, these are great, great options.
Oh, right. So if you're going, I mean, part of the problem is if you don't start the seedlings yourself and you're going to purchase them, those plants had to get here somehow. Right. And they're grown someplace south. Some usually Washington or Oregon are probably our main, plant origin spots. You know, it's a great place for nurseries. So those plants have to get packed up and they have to get put on the barges. In rare occasions, they're put on a jet and they're brought up here. So they've gone through some work, for goodness sake. So it's hard. You know, we want to pick out the best ones after that whole transportation issues. So some of that's a little bit out of the control, obviously, of the nurseries. So they get what they get, right? And they do the best to keep them going. So how you're gonna pick through those plants is to really look for the ones that look the healthiest. It's like, well, no duh, Kitty. How do I tell if it looks healthy? One of the things I tend to look for is, you know, how many of the leaves are yellow. You know, are they yellow and wilted? Those yellow wilted leaves aren't going to come back. Those are gone. Doesn't matter how careful you take care of them. Doesn't matter, you know, how the nursery tries to take care of them. They need to trim back. So you need to make sure a good proportion of the leaves are green and ready to go.
The other thing that it's good to look for is pests. Sometimes there's a slug. Sometimes there's some aphids. These are things that happen when you're growing a lot of plants in a close association or shipping them and you don't know, you know, where they've been. So those are some good things to check for as well. You can manage for that if you get them home and didn't notice when you were purchasing them that they had those things. Of course, the slugs or the snails, you just get rid of those. If a start you have purchased has some aphids, and it's not that unusual, just wash them in soapy water, you know, before you plant them on. And that'll help you from spreading those into the rest of your plants. Now, your own plants in your garden, your greenhouse may have some aphids as well. So, you know, aphids are not the end of the world. They're just something to deal with. And soapy water or a good spray down, if the plant is sturdy enough to handle a good spray down, can make a big difference.
Yeah, so when I go out, I mean, I look for plants I want, you know, and sometimes I'll stretch the edges of what I think is a healthy plant because I really want it. And then I'll take it home and kind of love it up, you know, or trim it and, you know, baby it along and hopefully it recovers. But for the most part, there's within the realm, the plants that are there, there's ones that, you know, took to shipping better, or they were in the right spot in the crate or in the tray that, you know, they were a little bit more protected. So I definitely look for ones that have the most green leaves. I look for ones that aren't wilted. You know, sometimes they get here and they've been longer in shipping than ideal. So they can be super wilted. Most of the reputable nurseries and places, you know, throughout the state will take those plants and kind of love them up before they put them out. But you can't always do that. You know, you kind of get what you get. So it's your job to look for plants that are healthy with lots of green leaves, you know, roots that are there. If there's tons of roots coming out through the bottom, it's like, it's kind of a judgment call. You know, they're pot bound, but oh, they're also healthy. It's like, how do you decide?
Right. For annuals, you can trim back annual flowers. You can trim back a lot of those roots and baby the plant once you transplant it, and it will regrow the roots, and it will generally have a sense of, oh, okay, we're starting over here and we're going to get going. If you're buying starts that are vegetable plants and they're very root bound and they don't look very good, it can be difficult to convince them to really take to your garden and grow. They may just grow a small amount and do what we call bolt, which is basically try flowering and never really give you that product that you're looking for in terms of a vegetable.
Right. I've seen a lot of good looking greens in town as starts, and I've seen a lot of good looking herbs, and those have, you know, you can see some roots coming out through the bottom. So I don't want to say that that's bad. It's really more that when you turn a plant upside down and the whole thing just falls out because the roots are going around and around, that you kind of end up with, you can potentially end up with a problem. So you're always kind of hedging your bets, you know, with things. But some roots coming out are okay, especially if the top still looks really good.
And there are exceptions. So here's one of them that works for me. And I would suggest, if you have things that you buy every year that are must-haves for you, and for me it's the Livingstone daisies, and Livingstone daisies do not ship well. They always look terrible. This is not anyone doing a bad job. They are kind of succulent-y looking. Their leaves and stems are very tender. But you know what? They look terrible when I buy them, and I just clip off all of the stuff that looks the worst, pot them up, and you know what? They are incredible. So I know I can buy several Livingstone daisies that look like they are on their way out, and they will come right around. So that's the thing, as you gain experience and pay attention to what is it that you can buy that looks kind of terrible and it'll actually be just fine. And Livingstone daisies are completely in that category.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I've bought ones that they just look like hell. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you bring them home, you put them outside, and they look, they spring back to life. They produce lots of flowers. So yeah, that's one. I think the other one that I'll buy whatever are the Sky Lovers, because there's usually not a lot of those around. They are a little bit fussy sometimes to ship. I just grab them, and then I love them up, basically, and hope for the best, because it's worth it to me. It's not one I grow from seed. It's one I really love, so great. I put it in the greenhouse. You know, don't pet it, but essentially it's like, oh, please grow well.
So after you've chosen, I mean, I want to go to the next step. So the next step is to think about where this plant has come from. It's come from probably a container, or it's come from a place where it's much warmer overnight in particular than here. So you need to harden off. And that just means coming in and out of a protected space. And whether you plant them right out and you're hardening off in, it consists of you covering and uncovering them. That's one way. The other way is to take your whole tray of starts in and out, so that at night when it's chilly, they're in and you're taking them out to feel the environment. And there's a few things that they need to get used to. They need to get used to breezes, which they don't usually have, and they need to get used to cooler weather and potentially pounding rain.
Yes, there's been lots of pounding rain. Basically, especially this year, since it's colder this year and it's wetter right now, I buy things and I put it in my greenhouse until, you know, the weather moderates enough that I'm, you know, covering up my beds and I have these nice protected places for them to go outside. So even things that I'm going to put outside, I mean, I've purchased lettuce and herbs and some other annuals, and it's like, fine, you guys just stay in the greenhouse. If I need to, I'll repot them in the greenhouse until it's suitable weather for them to go out. Because it's just like, it's kind of too much to ask. It's like in the 40s. So it's cool.
Right. So tomorrow is the frost-free date that we say is, you know, the usual frost-free date for Sitka. Of course, it's no guarantee, and we have had some serious frosts after May 15th when you look at the last 30 years of gardening. I remember one distinctly on May 21st, which was a little shocking. They're short, so it's pretty easy to cover for them and not a problem. But I have my fuchsias out and wintered them over and got them started in the house in the windows. But they're now out, and they have just completely stopped growing.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a problem. They're just waiting for warmer weather, and they look great, but they are not doing anything. So if you've got things that you've planted out and you're like, well, wow, these are not doing anything, no surprise, it's cold and rainy and they're just waiting for a little better weather like the rest of us.
Exactly. So petunias are another plant that, I mean, they produce beautiful flowers, but right now they are not going to like this rain. So I'm not saying you shouldn't buy petunias. I'm just saying protect them. They're one that I would put undercover. I might put those undercover in most places most of the time.
Right.
But especially right now, getting them all, you know, getting them going, keeping them happy. Yeah, I would keep those undercover. I mean, honestly, my greenhouse is full of annuals that I've started, you know, that other years I might start putting them out more. I'm just like, no, I'll just hang on and wait.
So what is this a good time for? This is a good time to plant tree and shrubs. They don't mind having a cooler start, and they need to get their roots reestablished when you do a transplant. So this is a great time to plant them. They also love the rain when they get transplanted, so that's actually a bonus. It's hard to work the soil if it's really wet, but if you can get a dryish day in a series of wet days, that's a perfect weather for transplanting trees and shrubs. Also, we wanted to talk a little bit about primroses today, and there's nothing wrong with doing things with primroses in this kind of weather. In fact, if you look around, most other than the tulips and daffodils that are coming on, most of the bright colors in gardens right now are primroses.
Right. So it is a great time. I'm not doing much with my primroses now because they're already established and out there. But they are such rewarding plants because they really do like our climate, and they come in a variety of colors and blooming styles and actually blooming periods. So we're not talking about the primroses that you generally buy at like a florist place. Some of the nurseries also sell them. We're going back and forth if they're Primula acaulis or vulgaris, but they're the shorter, kind of wrinkly leaf ones. We're talking more about the drumstick types right now. There's also Wanda. There's Dorothy, some of our other favorites. There's hybrids that are bullianas. There's actually a pretty huge number of primroses. And those are the ones I really recommend that people put out in their bed to mix up with their perennials or their annuals for that matter. And right now I think the showstoppers are really the denticulatas, the drumstick ones. They're gorgeous.
My Wandas look really great as well. So the drumstick ones, you know, those are the ones that are a pom-pom, and they come in whites and lavender, and every now and then you get that really bold, more purple or magenta one. They love our climate. They do well here. So if you don't have those and you're looking for a fun flower for this time of year, the denticulatas are perfect. The Wandas, those are the ones that look like a creeping mat. And in fact, they are almost invasive. They're not hard to control, so I wouldn't say they are invasive, but they're definitely spreaders. But in my book, welcome spreaders, and they come in a variety of colors. Trending toward the pinks and purples are the most hardy ones, the ones that seem to last longest in the garden. Those acaulis ones, the common primroses that you buy, often they're the first plants sold in the grocery stores or the nurseries, and I'm all about buying those and potting them up so you have a cheery plant on your doorstep. But just know that most of those are not hardy in our climate.
Right. Sometimes they come back for a year, maybe two, but they don't tend to come back and, you know, spread like the other ones. And in this case, I actually love it that most of the primroses you have to divide every few years because you get so many of them. I haven't had too many primroses yet. I'm happy to divide them and move them around or share them or whatever. But that is probably the one thing to remember with the primroses is they do better if you do divide them.
Especially the ones that are doubles. And by doubles, I mean they have a frilly looking flower rather than a simple five lobed flower. So the we call them doubles if they have like a packed flower face. And those in particular will really kind of go away if you don't divide them and move them around. They need more encouraging than just waiting there. The Wandas and Dorothy, tough as nails, the Denticulatas, they appreciate some dividing and moving, but not necessary in the same level as a lot of those doubles and interesting colored ones.
Right. They just start to look better. You know, you end up with this kind of almost a mound of the leaves with the drumstick ones. And so it's definitely nice to move those around. I've had good luck with just like letting one to go. Dorothy is actually a little fussier in my yard, which is kind of funny. But Wanda, she just like keeps spreading out and putting out these, you know, intensely kind of pink purple flowers. I love that hit of color this time of year.
So Dorothy is usually yellows to pales and a little more restrained than the Wandas. The other one that is really great is if you can get a hold of the one called City of Juno. It was developed in Juno, and I don't know, it's a selection, so I don't know what its species name is, but it has the color of the brightest Wandas, but the flowers grow up on a stalk, and they're really very stunning, and they really benefit from dividing and moving around. And if your primroses... So Wanda's tough. We have already said that. Same with Dorothy. But if your primroses don't look like they're doing as well, they just need some organic food. They need to be fed up. And that's what I really found. I saw some of my City of Junos kind of lagging. And then I fed them. And wow, this year they look fantastic.
Excellent. Yeah, I need to divide those. They're blooming right now. But I noticed they're starting to get a little crowded. I mean, later on in the year, there's a whole nother slew of primroses that, you know, maybe we'll talk about later, but I have white ones that are fragrant. I have yellow and red ones that are fragrant on tall stalks. I have the great candelabra ones that, you know, bloom continuously up the stem. Oh my goodness. So primroses are for us.
Yeah. The other one I like is the Florindae. Mm-hmm. Their scent is amazing. They're really, really scented. And in fact, if you bring too many of them in, it can be overpowering. But I love to put one in a mm-hmm. mixture of garden flowers, and it'll really help help keep the place scented up. They also are really robust in our climate, and they'll seed around. And so that's always nice.
Right.
And you can, you know, say, okay, not here, and you're in charge. But it's nice when a plant that you really like is seeding itself around into your garden.
It is. I mean, primroses and columbines are the main ones. I'm like, I'm not worried about you guys. You will keep going. You know, I might have to move you or you know, thin a few of you out, but you are happy and there. So I did want to, in case you're like, why are you just talking about flowers, ladies? I want to hear some more about things I can eat. I have a couple of things I was thinking about in the garden that are pretty much are ready to harvest. And some are growing like great guns. Rhubarb is going wild right now. It's like time for me to start harvesting and pulling it up. And honestly, all I have to do with my rhubarb is I do feed it. It does like, it's a heavy feeder. And, you know, because we're eating the stems of the leaves, you know, you want to keep that going. The more of a higher nitrogen in your mix, the more it's going to produce leaves and not, you know, start producing flowers. And the other trick is to divide it periodically, share it around or, you know, colonize more of your yard with rhubarb.
And it's not easy to divide it. We know that. It often requires a major sharp shovel or an axe or a sturdy back. But yes, that really helps. And one thing, if you don't want to move it and you're like, oh, I don't really want to move it, I don't want any more, is cut half of it out and backfill where you took that piece out with manure or a really nitrogen-rich source and then give that to, you know, put it on the side of the road there for somebody else to enjoy, plant it in their yard.
Yeah, people are always asking for rhubarb. start. So yes, if you have too much, I think there are people out there that would like it. The other perennial vegetable that I'm super happy with in my yard right now is the French sorrel. I love that stuff. I move it around every once in a while, you know, and feed it up, but it's one of my earliest greens and I use it in a bunch of different ways. Actually, it makes the best pesto as far as I'm concerned. I mean, basil pesto is good. I want to be dissing basil pesto, but French sorrel pesto is absolutely spectacular and it's there early. I mean, my basil will be coming on later on, but right now it's French sorrel season.
Fresh chives, their chives are so tough, and in fact, you usually end up pulling them out because they'll seed around and expand rapidly in your garden, but they are really a taste of freshness in the spring. I also have what's called a walking onion, and those are perennial and come back. I do best this time of year by growing a pot of them in my greenhouse, and so I've already harvested there, and then the ones that are in the garden and do fine also are still coming on because it's so much warmer in the greenhouse than out. But those are a couple of things that, you know, you can eat right away early on.
They're super nice. I was just going to give a garlic report. So we planted garlic in the late summer or fall, depending on how things worked out with your timing last year. And I, you know, fed those up. I covered them up with seaweed and all that. And they are looking spectacular right now, despite, you know, this not super warm weather. Some of them have actually reached some pretty good size. And sadly, the biggest ones are ones that I've kind of lost track of who is who, which is unfortunate. I've tried to be really much more diligent about labeling all of my little garlic patches, but I have one patch that's like, miscellaneous a mix. So I'm going to have to, you know, carefully mark that. So what I've done to it this spring is when there was herring row and, you know, materials ended up on the beach, I fed them some of that to give them a little bit more of a boost. But my goodness, they're doing great this year. So I'm crossing my fingers that they continue to do great.
I know I've had questions in the past where people were worried that their garlic was up so early, you know, I mean, even a month ago or more, when everything else was like waiting and the garlic was suddenly like, whoa, we're here. And it seems to not matter. Those garlic leaves make it through, you know, freezes and snow and everything else. So, and in the end, I mean, yes, you can eat garlic greens, but you're going for that garlic bulb, and that'll be late in the middle to late in the summer when you're harvesting that. So the weather now is a sort of a doesn't matter for the old garlic garden.
No, it's pretty good as long as, you know, you have reasonable, you know, well-drained soil. You know, the raised beds are the ticket for us. And so for the rest of vegetables that I'm kind of holding, I have leeks that I'm holding that are going to go out. I have various members of the cabbage family. I haven't even thought about planting my carrots yet. But I'm going to start, you know, covering up those beds. The next, you know, halfway decent day, I will actually start building, you know, my towers of Rimae, so that they get a little bit of protection. And, you know, hopefully things will probably warm up and give us a little bit better weather for, you know, growing our vegetables. But if they don't, well, okay, fine. I got Rimae. I got row covers.
Right. And remember, your row covers are both for climate control and to guard off the pests that like to fly in and lay their eggs. The root maggots. Those root maggots. So, yeah. And once you have them, putting the Rimae over doesn't save you from them. So it's all about prevention in terms of root maggots. If you find that you have them, they don't, you know, they're not a problem for humans. They just don't make your garden plants grow very well. But they're a fly. They fly in, lay their eggs right near your starts, and then the little maggots feed on the roots of your broccolis and all your brassicas. And so that's what, and your radishes, your dicones, all of those. So that's what you're trying to do, is just keep it all wrapped up to prevent that from happening.
So some things that I have started and are outside, I've planted about half of my potatoes, and I've also planted peas. You know, peas don't mind it being cold. It's more like, oh, I got to get the oomph to get out there and plant them. Planted some fava beans. I think those are the main ones that are outside right now. And honestly, only the peas are coming up. Everything else is like, we're fine. We'll just wait. Thank you.
Right. Yeah, cool weather is fine for potatoes. They'll just do whatever they're doing. So this isn't a bad time to focus on getting your potatoes in.
I tried something different this year.
Oh?
So, yes. I mean, I actually like growing potatoes in big pots, like the big old long line pots, you know, that hopefully might be more of them around right now. But anyway, and I would just put a little bit of dirt in the bottom and I put the potatoes, and as they come up, I would just fill the pot. So it made super easy, you know, and it still does make super easy way to harvest. You just dump the dang pot over. I love it. So, but this year I'm like, I had a raspberry bed in the past, and an old raspberry bed, and the raspberries have long since moved, and so I'm using it for potatoes. So I dug it up a little bit, put down weed cover, you know, that black stuff, put down some soil, put down some potatoes, and then I'm adding a little soil and seaweed. And I try to use new soil, air quote, new soil, like that I've gotten from tipped over trees and things like that, and seaweed for that. So we'll see. I've never tried to the weed block on the bottom, but there's a lot of like native plants that try to sneak in there, so I'm gonna see how that goes. So good thing I won't starve if it fails.
I'll be waiting to get the report on that. I'm always interested. You know, there's in commerce a lot of that weed suppressant cloth sold, and in some of my experience here, what happens is it's beautiful the first year, it's okay the second year, and after that, everything invades around in it, through it, and
right.
in particular on top of it in our climate.
Yes.
And so it's not a permanent solution. It's a solution. So no problem with trying that out, making things happen, but in our climate is not a permanent solution.
No, I just thought it might slow down the huckleberry roots and the deer heart roots that start, you know, that are going to come up from the bottom. And the other thing I do tend to do is I'll put like old cardboard underneath that as well. The one thing I'm a little bit worried about drainage, so I'm hoping it still works. But I think as I build up, you know, the mound as the potatoes grow, it should be fine. But I will report.
One of the things is, you want to hill your potatoes. And that's always a misnomer for some folks that think that means they're going to grow their potato on the top of the hill. But it's actually the opposite. You're going to grow your potato, your seed potato, at the bottom of the ditch. And the hilling part is building the soil up over those leaves. In fact, you can just cover them right up as they're coming up. So when you first planted your potatoes, the bed looks like a bunch of dips. And the seed potatoes are in the bottom of each one of those. And you don't need to cover them up very much. And in fact, they'll probably sprout and get going faster if you don't fill and cover them deeply. You want them almost to be just right at the surface.
Yeah, and that's pretty much what I did. I just put a little bit of soil back on the top, and kind of the edges have seaweed, and then I'll just keep building in, see what happens.
Yeah, so it's always an interesting year in gardening. Every year is different. The weather's different. We're also coming out of the supply chain is different. Our interests are different.
Right.
Experiment a little bit, have a good time, do your tried and trues, because that's part of the way that you have success.
Right, and do what you love. The one thing about experimenting is keep notes. That's sometimes the part I fail on. So yes, keep your good notes, grow the plants you love, and try some new ones, and really enjoy yourself out in your garden.
One way, of course, pictures along the way, mm-hmm. or garden sketches, or save those tags for the things that you purchase. Sometimes you may not care about what it is until sometime later, especially with shrubs and trees that you, suddenly you're like, wait, what was that exact variety? Suddenly you want that as well, that information.
Yes, indeed. And I would emphasize doing multiple things. So either I would go for notes, pictures, and tags. Sorry.
And it's a great time to go around and see who else is growing what and make notes for what you will want in your garden in the future. Well, thanks so much for joining us. You're listening to Molly Kabler and
Kitty Labonte
on The Garden Show. This is KCAW in Sitka. We'll be back next week. In the meantime, all the best in community radio right here.